talk about how the public can participate. And when I'm finished, we will take questions. So the whole purpose of doing a five-year consolidated plan is because the city of Nashville receives direct allocations for four grants from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. These are the Community Development Block Grant, which is a wide-ranging grant to serve low-income persons or areas. And low-income persons are defined as households with income 80% or below of area median income. You can do anything from homeowner rehab to different public services, economic development activities, public facilities and improvements like sidewalks in low-income areas. You cannot do new construction with CDBG. The next one is the Home Investment Partnership Program, and that is the can only be used for housing, and the only source of funds we get to do new construction in Davidson County. The third one is the Emergency Solutions Grant, and this grant is dedicated solely for addressing issues of homelessness. Then the fourth one is housing opportunities for persons with HIV or AIDS and their families. And this is the only grant we have that is outside, we can do outside of Davidson County. It's in our metropolitan statistical area. And so every 5 years, we have to prepare a plan to tell HUD and the public how we're going to use these funds to address housing and community development needs in Davidson County. Our five-year plan begins on June the 1st of this year and will go through May 31st of 2023. So our consolidated plan is organized according to a template that HUD provides for us. All the questions that are answered in the draft document are straight from HUD system. It's organized into these sections. It starts with an executive summary. We have a section on the process, and that describes all the efforts we undertook to develop the draft, as well as how we're obtaining comments on the draft now that it's been released. We've done a market, a needs assessment that looks at housing needs, homeless needs, non-housing community development, and that's things like the need for infrastructure improvements for public services, then non-homeless special needs, and that's the needs of persons with HIV and AIDS, persons with disabilities, survivors of domestic violence. The market analysis, likewise, looks at the supply that we have in Davidson County to address the needs. And then finally, the strategic plan portion of the consolidated plan is where we take the needs assessment, the market analysis, as well as the input we've obtained during the process, and identify the priorities of the consolidated plan for the next 5 years. We also have in this document Program Year 1 Action Plan. And the Program Year 1 Action Plan is where, again, we program the funding we get for CDBG, Home, ESG, and HOPLA to address the priorities that are listed in our strategic plan. Then we also have some supplemental materials in our appendices and exhibits. So highlights from our process. So the consolidated plan is formed by a number of things. One is the data that HUD provided, as well as that we've obtained supplementally. We have plans and reports. These are some of our local plans and reports that have been produced, such as the Mayor's Housing National Report, the Community Needs Assessment that Metro Central Services produces every year, and other reports such as the Public Housing Five-Year Plan. We've had the overall consolidated plan was guided through a work group, and that work group was composed of representatives from metro agencies such as the Mayor's Office, Metro Social Services, Metro Human Relations Commission, Metro Homelessness Commission, also our partners at the Housing Fund, and then of course And the purpose of this work group, and we met monthly beginning in October, except for the month of December, is to make sure that we're aligning the consolidated plan with other initiatives and data that's already produced and available, and we're not duplicating, and just aligning and building on what's already starting or underway in the city. We held 7 community meetings. Some of them focused solely on homelessness. Others were wide-ranging and focused on housing and community development. We had 13 stakeholder consultations. And these were topic-specific, from different housing consultations to homelessness. We had a HOPA consultation. We had non-housing community development consultation. And between our community meetings and our stakeholder consultations, we had well over 200 people attend. At least 185 were unduplicated. So we had some people attend more than one time or more than one meeting. But we also had over 85 agencies participate in our community meetings or our stakeholder consultations. We released a survey on March the 16th. It was available through April 13th and received 201 responses. Then finally, for public hearings, we kicked off the process on March the 1st with a public hearing where we introduced the consolidated plan to the public, reviewed how it would be developed, and now we're in the public comment period where we will have 4 hearings on the draft. This is our 3rd public hearing. We have one more coming up on May the 31st. So we talk about the needs assessment. I want to start by talking about the data. HUD did give us default data. So when I spoke to a HUD template, when we download that from the HUD system, all of our data tables are pre-populated with either 2009, 2013 American Community Survey 5-year estimates, or the 2009 to 2013 Comprehensive Housing Affordability Strategy data, which we call the CHAS. And so we know that a lot of this data is dated. And wherever data from the more current 2012-2016 ACS 5-year estimates could easily be used, we did that in tables, and that's noted. The most current CHAS data that's available is the 2010 to 2014. The CHAS data that is available is very limited, so sometimes it didn't translate exactly into the HUD tables, so we created our own supplemental tables in the narrative to tell the story a different way. We tried every way possible to use the most current data. We did not use the 1-year estimate because we wanted to be consistent with what HUD provided, which were 5-year estimates. So just some big highlights. The baseline data HUD gave us was 2000, and they also had some 2013 data. We compared from 2000 to 2016 the growth in the median income from over 39,000 to over 50,000. During the same time, though, the percent of people living in poverty increased from 13% to 17.5%. Our data is very consistent with other studies and conversations that are happening in the city, in that cost burden is by far the most common housing problem for households across all income ranges. And cost burden means that a household is paying more than 30% of their gross income on housing expenses. But when we look at our very low income households from 0 to 30% of the area median income, severe cost burden was by far the most common housing problem. And severe cost burden means that they're paying more than 50% of their income on housing costs. So we look at the market analysis, and I'm really pulling out really big highlights. And we have a very dense document online that really provides a lot of data. But this is one I thought was useful. One of the things I'd asked us to do was not only look at the resources of the 4 grants, but other public resources that can address different housing needs, other federal, state, that list different resources that can address various components of housing, such as new construction for rental or homeownership. And we've divided it by income range. We didn't really go above 120, but they're in the column of the highest income that can be served. For example, home rental cannot be used to assist any income above 60% of the area median income. On the other hand, items listed in 81 to 120 can be used to assist lower incomes. So those are the public resources that we were able to grasp, and there may be some ones that we missed, but these are the ones that we're very familiar with and have been utilized. Another part of our market analysis, and I think this one is a little bit, quite a bit alarming, HUD asked us to look at the inventory of low-income housing tax credits and project-based rental assistance units that are at risk of being lost, meaning that they will no longer be affordable during the five-year consolidated plan period. When I talk about PBRA, these are the privately owned project-based rental assistance units, not the ones that MDHA owns now that we've converted under our rental assistance demonstration. So over 4,000 of these units could be lost in the next 5 years. That means that the owners can opt out of their contracts and sell the properties, or that their compliance deadlines have ended. So this is something that we need to keep. I'm going to take comments at the end if you can make a note. That way I can get through the presentation. And then we have another chart, three different tables in our market analysis that I just thought could give us a good picture. What is the change in the cost of housing, the median home value and median contract rent from 2000 to 2016, and you can see how those values have increased. The second table really shows the number of households and the level of rent that they pay. So most households pay between $500 and $999 for rent in Davidson County. It doesn't really tell us by bedroom size or income. That's just an overview. The bottom table, though, is ties back to our earlier conversation about cost burden. This is actually housing affordability. You can see for households with incomes at 30% and HAMFI, H-A-M-F-I, for this plan means the same thing as the area median income. HUD just uses it interchangeably. Only 7% of households with incomes at 30% or below can afford their housing. There's no data available on home ownership that we were able to obtain. And we usually don't see a whole lot of home ownership at this income level. Even for households with incomes at 50%, still only 25% can afford their apartments, and only 10% can afford homes where it's affordable to them. So I think that just reiterates the conversations on housing affordability in Nashville. So we move through the high-level overview of our key findings from our needs assessment and our key pieces of our market analysis. We also used our input through our meetings and our survey to develop our priorities for the consolidated plan. So our first priority is twofold. It's to increase the number of decent, safe, and affordable housing units. And that means physical construction of new units. The second part is to help low and moderate income households access affordable housing. So we want to make sure that particularly persons with protected characteristics that have often encountered housing discrimination that prevents them from accessing affordable housing can actually get into the new housing that's being built. So we're increasing not only units but opportunities. The second one is to preserve affordable housing units and help low and moderate income households retain housing. So again, we want people to be able to keep the housing they have. The first part of this priority is keeping our existing supplies in stock. The second part is helping low and moderate income households maintain housing stability. The third priority is to support facilities and services for the homeless and persons with HIV or AIDS. The fourth one is to help create pathways to self-sufficiency for low and moderate income persons and families. The fifth one is revitalize distressed neighborhoods and underserved areas. And these are very low income areas that really have not seen much public or private investment over the years. And then the sixth one just speaks to our responsibilities to undertake prudent grant management and planning associated with our four grant programs. But we also not only have these priorities, we have certain areas of Davidson County where we want to target our funds to address the priorities. The first one, and this speaks to priority five on revitalizing distressed neighborhoods, there are 26 census tracts in Davidson County where 70% of the households have incomes at or below 80% of the area median income. And we'll show you in another slide where these are. So these are CDBG target areas. This is where we will target our actions to revitalize distressed neighborhoods. The second geographic priority is the Napier Pseudocom Choice Neighborhood Planning Area. In 2016, MDHA was awarded a Choice Neighborhoods Planning Grant from HUD that allowed us to do comprehensive planning for the neighborhood around the Napier Pseudocom public housing property. And this not only includes revitalization of distressed public housing, but also the opportunity to revitalize the greater neighborhood, bring in some public improvements, as well as to utilize public services to support the residents in that area. I'll show you that boundary. Then the third one are housing target areas, and these are 14 council districts in Davidson County that were reported to have at least a 40% increase in property values after the 2017 reappraisal. These are also some of the areas that we looked at on the Metro website that are among the top for having property standards violations or among the most frequent or high-valued building permits. All of these are indicators of gentrification. We've also added the areas where MDHA owns public or affordable housing. The distinction between public and affordable housing is the public housing are the properties that MDHA still owns that have not converted under the rental assistance demonstration. When that happens, it's now considered affordable housing. So our CDBG target area. This is the list of the 26 census tracts, and this is a map. So you can see the North Nashville area, then we get up a little into Bordeaux, then Madison. We come down into along the Lafayette corridor, and then we have some census tracts down in the Antioch area. And these are the ones that will be targeted for revitalizing distressed neighborhoods. The areas with the dots, that indicates that there is an MDHA public housing property in that census tract. This is the boundary of the Napier Pseudocom Choice Neighborhoods Planning Area. And the Napier Pseudocom properties are up here in this corner in the brown with the circle. So you can see that our planning boundary that goes all the way down is much larger than our property, and it creates an opportunity to do comprehensive revitalization in a very distressed area along a major corridor. And there are a number of single-family properties in this area, as well as blighted commercial properties along Lafayette. And then our housing target areas, these are the 14 census tracts listed in descending order from the one that had the highest increase in property values percent-wise all the way to at least 40%. This is just a map of all the council districts in Davidson County, and you can see on translate our funds into addressing these priorities? Well, the first, to talk about what our action plan is, it is our annual update to the consolidated plan. We have to submit the program year one action plan along with our consolidated plan. Then every year for 4 years hereafter, we will do an update every year as we get our funding awards from HUD for funding announcements. Even though these grants come in on a formula basis, we must submit an action plan to HUD or we do not get funding. So this is a technical application. But what we do in this action plan is now we're providing the allocations and project budgets for activities that address our priorities. This action plan covers the period of June 1st of 2018 to May 31st, 2019. And then this is the actual award or allocations that HUD has provided to us on May the 1st. So this does reflect a $1.3 million increase over 2017 allocations, with approximately over $400,000 for CDBG, a little over $690,000 for home, only about $7,000 for ESG, and around $200,000 for HOPWA. So we were very pleased to see that there is the increase in home of over $609,000, that grant has been cut by Congress nearly in half since 2010, so we were glad to see some funding restored. So our budget, and this is a huge, big spreadsheet. It's in our action plan, it's in your slides, but this top piece here are the overall category project areas, which are administration and planning, housing, public services, public facilities and improvements, economic development, and then does anyone need, and perhaps our translator, does anyone need translation, or is everybody okay? All right. We do have a Spanish translation available if it's needed. And we have some documents available in Spanish as well. But our administration and planning cannot exceed by regulations more than 20% of our grant and plus program income that we receive. Our housing, you'll see, we're budgeting half of community development block grant funds to address housing. Historically, it's averaged 35%. So we really increased the use of CDBG to address housing. Public services cannot exceed 15% of our grant plus program income. We're budgeting around 13%. Public and facility improvements right now is at 4%. Economic development is at 13%, but the economic development reflects a very large Section 108 loan repayment of over $560,000 that I'll talk about in a minute, and this is our last payment, so I'm very excited. So then we get into here, we talk about all of our CDBG housing. We've got, all we do with CDBG housing is rehab. Again, as I mentioned at the beginning, you cannot use CDBG for new construction. These are a number of the public services, and there is a whole section in the action plan. It's titled AP38. And that's where we really detail all of the activities we're going to undertake, and then our economic development. And I'm going to show this to you in a different way in a minute as they address each of our priorities. These are just overall grant budgets. Our home budget focuses only on new construction. As you see, saw on the previous slide, half of our CDBG is going to rehab. And since this is our only source of funds to new construction, that's where we're focusing it. Also, because we want to focus and address our lower income households and providing housing, we're focusing more on new construction because as my table on housing affordability shows that there's no data on 0 to 30% AMI on ownership, and that income level is likely not to own homes. So we want to make sure that there's affordable housing that's available for rent. We do have some home ownership new construction. And then we have a new activity that we're introducing this year, and it's called a nonprofit partner set aside. We've been hearing a lot of conversations in recent years. Some of our smaller nonprofit partners aren't able to compete on funding opportunities with some of our larger nonprofits or for-profits, because we're able to partner with both. And so we're setting aside a portion of funds that is available to a nonprofit housing developer that hasn't received home money in 5 years and has completed the Barnes nonprofit capacity building program. Because one of the things that home requires is that we underwrite the project, and the capacity is one of those things we have to review. So we want to make sure that they have completed the Barnes capacity building program. These are our proposed ESG and HOPA budgets. Of course, our traditional homeless services, which are rapid rehousing, prevention, shelter operations, and essential services, and outreach. And then our CAFWA, which is only to serve persons with AIDS and their family. We have sponsor admin, means that when we partner with a nonprofit partner, they can take a portion of funds to administer their programs. They can provide short-term rent, mortgage, and utilities. They can use it for operations in different ways and supportive services. So how does this look with the priorities? So I'm going to start with the first one. And now we're going to talk about our goals, our target areas, and our income. We're putting it all together. So our first priority on increasing the number of affordable housing units is in this top activity for new construction. And that will be achieved through home, solely through home. Again, our only program that we can do that. We expect to build or fund, and they won't be constructed for probably about 2 years after we award the funds, 50 units in with the year 2018 funds. These are all targeted to those housing target areas, and the rental is must serve households with income 60% or below. Of course, if we don't have viable projects in our HTA areas, we can go countywide. To help address the second part of assisting low and moderate income persons or households access affordable housing, we will fund fair housing activities with a partner to make sure that those persons with protected characteristics and under the Fair Housing Act, which are among race, color, religion, national origin, family size, disability, that any instances of housing discrimination that can pose a barrier to accessing these new units, that we're helping identify and address those so that we can reduce those barriers. Again, number one is about increasing housing opportunities in two ways. Our second priority on preserving affordable housing, that comes through our CDBG rehab at the top on retaining affordable housing stock. So we've got a targeted homeowner rehab program proposed in the Napier City boundary to address. There's lots of blighted single family homes in that boundary that we really want to target. Because what we don't want to happen is that as we redevelop that area, that those homeowners lose their housing because they can't afford to maintain it or there's potential codes issues. Then we've got a robust program for housing rehab in these gentrified areas, these housing target areas. We have a weatherization assistance program that'll work concurrently with a weatherization assistance program that's funded through a grant from the Department of Energy that we also administer. That's for households at 200% of the poverty level, which equates to about 60%. That's countywide, and you can only access the weatherization assistance if you qualify for the Department of Energy program. This is a joint effort. We have a proposed rental rehab program so that landlords that want to rent to low-income tenant, low or moderate-income tenants can obtain financing to conduct, to do some rehab of units. If that landlord takes a Section 8 voucher, we will treat that financing as a grant to try to incentivize landlords to accept vouchers. And we do have a program that is focuses solely on replacing non-functioning HVAC units. That's not part of the weatherization, separate from that. And that's also countywide. So you can see on the far end, the income target, everything's at 80% or below of the median income except for our weatherization program. Then the second part on housing stability, we got an idea from Metro Social Services that did some funding opportunities this past year on anti-displacement efforts. And so we're going to model something very similar for the tenants of MDHA public housing or affordable housing and provide renter counseling for those tenants that are at risk of losing their housing for a potential lease violation for various different reasons. So we know that the lower income that you are and you lose your housing, it is extremely difficult to obtain new housing, so we really want, again, to reduce displacement. So that's what priority two speaks to, is reducing displacement. Priority three, on supporting facilities and services for homeless persons and persons with AIDS. Of course, ESG and HOPLA can only be used on these two activities. And ESG is countywide, while HOPLA can serve folks in our entire metropolitan statistical area. But we also have a CDBG program proposed, a public service. Any person who's homeless that can find housing through Metro Homeless Commission House National Program or any other housing program that they may have, and or they have a VASH voucher, which is a voucher for homeless veterans, or a Shelter Plus Care voucher that's administered by MDHA. We'll provide funding. It's limited to $1,000 one time per person, and that will pay rent, first month's rent, utilities, deposits, and rent deposits, pay directly to the landlord or the utility provider. So this is intended to help persons who are homeless, again, overcome some of those initial barriers to housing. It cannot pay arrears. That's prohibited by the regulations. So these are all of the different activities, and these are our grouped together because we will do an RFP to award these funds to providers, and then they will tell us how they want to address these activities. The goals are what we typically achieve historically. I do want to go back and say MDHA doesn't directly administer a number of these programs. We partner with nonprofits. And then finally, we still have some more goals to go. We have creating pathways of self-sufficiency, and we have two activities for here, or activity categories. One is creating economic opportunities for low and moderate income persons. So anytime we build anything using HUD money, MDHA builds a new building, or we award funds to a nonprofit or a for-profit to build a new housing development, or even a public facility, the HUD requires contractors to have what's called a Section 3 plan. And Section 3 is really our only kind of local hire opportunity that we have that the federal government will let us do. And what that means is the contractor has to have a plan that if they need to hire someone to help them with their job, that they have a plan to look at a Section 3 individual or business. And that means it's a low-income person living in the area, and our area is actually Davidson County. We are challenged in that we don't have very many at all Section 3 individuals or businesses on our list for contractors to choose from, yet we hear a lot about wanting to to make sure that low-income individuals have opportunities to all these construction projects that we are planning to undertake. So we're proposing an employment services program that will be actually administered through our recapitalization department that will specifically be focused on connecting low-income persons and businesses to workforce development opportunities if they need some training, and then to actual employment opportunities so that we can start really making those connections. Then we have another one that is focused on a micro-enterprise assistance. This is a long-standing program we've had, and a micro-enterprise is defined as a business with five or less employees, and the owner is low income, and that is really to help get small businesses started or stabilized, or even if they want to expand. And we're focusing again this in our distressed areas so we can bring some economic opportunities into these areas. The second component of priority four is to support youth programs. We've heard a lot about when we talk to the community or through surveys that we should start young in training people on job opportunities or employment or employability. And we've had a long running summer youth program. It's probably it is for sure our most popular. But it just isn't like a day camp. These are really structured programs for youth ages 6 to 18. And we usually partner with about 30 nonprofits, 28 to 30 nonprofits. And they must have, their program must have either a job skills component or a healthy lifestyles component. Then this is our second year or third year of supporting the Metro's Opportunity Now program. And that provides employment opportunities for youth in the city. Our specific portion, which is a very small part of the big Opportunity Now initiative, is focusing on opportunities for youth ages 14 to 16 through some of our through opportunities with some of our nonprofit partners. So there are some of the ways that we're going to work to help create pathways of self-sufficiency. In our priority five, revitalize distressed neighborhoods and underserved areas. That's where we propose to focus CDBG funding for public facilities, which could be community centers or parks or improvements like sidewalks. We'll be working with our planning department and the infrastructure office to look at where we need to go first. We'll wait and see what kind of the capital spending plan looks like and where there might be gaps. Of course, we don't have robust funding, so this is really intended, for example, in our current five-year consolidated plan, we have a similar activity where we're using these funds to build sidewalk segments that are missing in a neighborhood to connect to a bus stop or to a school. So those are some of the things that we've done with a similar program. And then this is just our admin budget for year one and year admin. You see our five-year budget, that's based on level funding. I've said this is my third public hearing. I keep saying it'll be true. If I put it in writing, then hopefully our funding will at least remain steady, if not go up. I mentioned earlier we have a Section 108 loan repayment, and in 1998, we obtained a Section 108 loan to acquire some landed property on the east bank of the Cumberland River that was used to, again, acquire blighted property that's now a park. And this is our very last payment. So I am so excited. It's repaid through the grant fund. So years two through five, we'll have over $560,000 that can be programmed for activities. So that's how our funding now is addressing our goals. You can see how much we plan to accomplish in year one and across year five and through year five, where we're going to target them, and the incomes. So how does this look? Obviously, priorities one and two are over 50% of the total funding. You know, obviously, you would think that priority one would have the most funding, but again, home being our only resource for new construction, much less than CDBG, we can't fund as many projects, but we still believe that because of the data, the input we've received, building more affordable housing is by far our number one priority. And so we're hoping that this document isn't just for use for our purposes, but the broader community and public officials can pick it up and say, yes, this is our number one priority. And then our second one is, let's keep what we have, and that's at 28%. And then as you just go on around the pie chart, you can, priority three was for services and facilities for the homeless. Priority four, again, is pathways to self-sufficiency. Priority five is economic, priority five is distressed neighborhoods. And priority six is admin. We actually took the Section 108 loan payment out as separate, so you can see where, how it takes up our grant, overall grant budget. And this is adding all of our funds together. So then we look at geographic